You're tuned in to the Kojo Nam, the show on WAMU 88.5. Peter Newsham has served with the Metropolitan Police Department for nearly 30 years, and he's been the force's official leader for about a year and a half. What has he learned on the job? Chief Newsham, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. Good afternoon.
You stepped into the role of D.C. Police Chief right as President Trump was elected. The season that followed saw a rise in protests and hate crimes. In response, you assured Washingtonians that D.C. would, quoting here, still be an inclusive city, that you were committed to, quoting again, fair, unbiased policing. How do you think you've demonstrated that over the course of the past year and a half?
You know, I've been very happy and pleased with the way that the police department has responded. You have an excellent police department here in Washington, D.C. You know, you look at the crime numbers from last year. We've seen violent crime in our city continuing to decline by, you know, significant increments. Last year was like a 22% reduction in violent crime. The trend so far this year appears to be going in the same direction. Whenever things like that are happening in the city, you know, as the chief of police, you're very pleased because, you know, what that represents to me is fewer victims of violent crime. A couple of things, you know, that I've talked about since I've taken this role is getting these illegal firearms out of the community and then making the police department a place where people want to work. And I think that we got a lot of work to do as an agency, but I think that we're moving in the right direction on both of those initiatives.
You were appointed by the mayor, approved by the council on a 12-1 vote. What is your relationship now with the council? Do you feel it has given the department adequate support and oversight?
Yeah, we have an excellent relationship. They include me when they want to have conversations about what's going on in the city. You know, I think that the relationship has been excellent. I obviously give my feedback. We don't always agree on issues, but at the end of the day, they're willing to listen. They're willing to hear the input that I have. And I think that, you know, you look at everything that's going on in the city, you know, the leadership at this in this city is largely responsible for all the progress that we're seeing.
But last week, D.C. Councilmember Trayon White criticized your department for what he believes was an imbalanced use of police resources. The councilmember was protesting at the site of a development project in Ward 8 on Friday, and he said he saw 18 police vehicles at the construction site. Here's a part of his post. He said the community asked for additional police to be outside of Eagle Academy during a town hall because of several shootings and homicides. The community was told MPD did not have the officers. Then he says, we had a shooting in Good Hope Road last night, yet our police can come here to police cement, bricks, and construction trucks. Guess you have to protect the investment while the people are being shot, homeless, and hopeless. What was your response to that?
Yeah, the council member and I, we communicated over that issue. The First Amendment Assembly.
I suspected that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
The First Amendment Assembly that was, over there was not handled in a different way than we would handle any other First Amendment Assembly. You know, we saw a large First Amendment Assembly just yesterday with the young people that came into our city. And what we do for First Amendment Assemblies, particularly when there's, you know, you have differing views, differing ideas, and you have a gathering of people, there's always a potential that something, you know, there's disagreements, and hopefully those disagreements, and most of the time the disagreements don't become so heated that there's physical confrontations. But that's really the idea of having police in the area for First Amendment assemblies. And, you know, we handle them all the same. We always send additional police resources. And, you know, I've talked to the council member about the resources that we have over in the 7th District.
Because he seemed to be suggesting that your priorities are misaligned.
Yeah, I think that was the suggestion. I think that's an unfair picture of MPD. The crime has been declining over in the 7th District at the same proportion that it's declining everywhere else in the city. So we are making substantial progress with regards to violent crime in his ward. And, you know, the council member sometimes gets frustrated. I don't blame him. We all get frustrated when we see that kind of violence happening anywhere in our city. And, you know, when it's happening in the ward that he represents, he gets very passionate about that. And I appreciate that. And I think, you know, the good news is that he and I continue to have a dialogue to get us both to a place where we feel comfortable with the way the police are responding.
In the wake of the fatal police shooting of unarmed motorcyclist Terrence Sterling, Last month, the district settled with the Sterling family for $3.5 million, the highest settlement ever reached in a fatal shooting by an on-duty officer. What message does that settlement convey to you and to your officers?
You know, whenever I talk about this shooting, I have to talk about the family and extend my condolences to the family. I'm sure that whatever settlement was reached is not sufficient for the loss of their son. And they have been, you know, I've had a couple of interactions with them. They've been incredibly gracious through this entire process. With regards to the police action on this particular case, we're getting to a point, hopefully, where we can reach a conclusion. You know, as you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office looked at the case. They determined that they did not have enough evidence to proceed with a criminal investigation or a criminal indictment. The case was handed back to the Metropolitan Police Department to investigate. We determined that the or our Use of Force Review Board determined that the shooting was unjustified, and there was a recommendation by the police department for termination. And then the officer in that case now is entitled to due process, and there will be a hearing. And the hearing is scheduled for April 11th. And that hearing is open to the media to come and watch and to report out to the public. And so with all that being said, what we're trying to do, I tried to explain the process to the community. There was a lot of concern about this particular use of force, this particular shooting. And I've kind of gone out and publicly explained the process to a bunch of different groups. I went to the council breakfast, the interfaith group. To a number of in every ward across the city, I did a presentation about how this was going to play out, and the community has been very patient. And hopefully, you know, shortly after April 11th, we'll come to a conclusion in this case.
But how do you respond to people who characterize what you describe as the officer being entitled to due process? We got a tweet from activist Brendan Orsinger. Seen his name before. I'm wondering if you could ask the chief how it might feel to the black community in D.C. that he fought to keep an officer on the force for a year and a half after he shot and killed Terrence Sterling. That is characterized as you fighting to keep the officer on the force. You call it due process.
Yeah, that's an interesting characterization and clearly a mischaracterization of the state of affairs in the district. The rules are the rules that have been determined by legal precedent, by employment rules, by the Constitution of the United States. There are people that are very passionate about this issue. They want a chief of police to wave a magic wand and terminate people in these types of cases. That I don't have that availability to me. I have to let the process play out. And I want to say that the community has been extremely patient. The family has been extremely patient. And I think we all need to wait to see what happens in April before we get angry.
Last month, you blocked at least two Twitter users. I think Brendan Orsinger was one of them, for interacting with your Twitter account, a move that prompted Mayor Burrell Bowser to remind district officials that they cannot block followers on their social media accounts. Were you aware of this district policy? What prompted you to take this action? It's my understanding that you were
the story behind it is more amusing probably than not. So I went to the Martin Luther King Day parade this past year. I've gone the past several years. And when I get to the parade, there's a guy there, and he's got his cell phone, and he follows me throughout the entire parade. And intermittently throughout the parade, he's asking me, why are you here? Chief, why are you here? And I'm like, well, I'm here to recognize an American legend, American hero. And I was invited, were some of the answers I think that I tried to express to him. And so later on, somebody who was walking with me, one of my staff, said, oh, you know, that's Brendan Orsinger. And I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, I've seen that name before. And I go back and I look at my Twitter account, and there's a person by the name of Brendan Orsinger who harangues me with, like, really kind of nasty messages. So I blocked him. And apparently somebody went to the Washington Post. They did a story which has gotten a lot of attention, which I find interesting. I don't have that many followers. In fact, my followers increased by about 20% after the story. But I think at the end of the day, you know, the mayor is right. There are all kinds of people that want to express their opinions to the chief of police in this city and to other directors. And it is inappropriate for me to block them. So I've since opened that communication back up, and I allow the messages, regardless of the content, to come into my Twitter account.
Since the fatal school shooting in Parkland, Florida, there has been a discussion stemming from the White House about arming teachers to prevent mass shooters. Do you have a position on that proposal?
Yeah, you know, you look at what the kids are saying. They don't want their teachers to be armed. The teachers don't want to be armed. And it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense if you have law enforcement who are armed to be arming teachers in our schools. I mean, I think that, you know, when you hear about introducing firearms into schools in any context, that doesn't sit right with me for sure. And, I was meeting with Tom Manger earlier this morning. He feels the exact same way out in
Montgomery County.
Yeah, the Montgomery County Chief of Police. And so I do think, you know, we obviously need to be thoughtful about how we are making sure our kids are safe in school. You know, you look at a situation that happened down there in Parkland. I mean, that's devastating. That devastates the entire country. And you see the reaction from the young people across the country. And it's almost like the young people are saying, listen, we need some common sense rules with regards to firearms. Because they do kill people. And this is a sentiment that I will continue to echo, is that in that case, the case in Las Vegas, the Pulse nightclub, and several others, the weapon of choice was an assault weapon. And those weapons were purposefully designed to kill human beings in a warfare situation. Now, those weapons are banned here in the District of Columbia, but I don't see anywhere where those types of firearms should be in any community under any circumstances. I just don't, you know, as a law enforcement official, it doesn't make sense to me. You know, it's one thing to have a hunting rifle if you're out on the range and you're a hunter and you want to hunt deer or what have you. You know, people can disagree with, you know, whether or not they agree with that type of activity. And having a hunting rifle makes some sense, but these assault weapons doesn't make any sense to me.
I only have time for one more question. It emerges from engagement on social media last year when the district was in the national spotlight for a seemingly high number of missing girls of color. A lot of that had to do with the fact that the district had changed its policy and was now talking about missing girls who were not necessarily kidnapped, but there was a backlash on social media. And in response to that backlash, Mayor Bowser said she would increase the number of officers assigned to missing children and create a task force to determine social services needed for runaway teens. 1 year later, how are those initiatives doing?
I think it was excellent. Matter of fact, all of the attention that was drawn as a result of what we did of posting these kids on social media that were reported missing has done a number of things. It created that task force so that resources can be given to young people who do chronically go missing. And the reason why that's so important is because, you know, when young people are away from adult supervision, they're vulnerable. And the potential for them to become the victims of a crime or of human trafficking increases significantly. And in my experience, kids go missing for two reasons. They go missing because they are rebellious and they're children, which kids do, or they go missing because there's a circumstance at their home which is creating them or making them want to leave that environment. And so to have a task force that includes people who can provide services to kids who may be in a bad situation and get them out of it, to me, is really kind of an ideal situation. So I was very pleased that the mayor established the task force. The other thing that we're getting on an operational level is it seems like when we put these images out, we're getting our kids back quicker. So they're not away from adult supervision. They're away from adult supervision for shorter periods of time, which, in my opinion, makes them safer. So we did go through that period. I know you lived through it and you reported on it. And it was very uncomfortable and people were very upset. But I think the ultimate result made us a better city and a better police department.
Peter Newsham is chief of the Metropolitan Police Department of the District of Columbia. Chief Newsham, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Kojo Namdi.